At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. This is a show where we talk about some news in the restaurant world, as well as a couple of meals we've had at restaurants you may want to try. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. He is a Houston hospitality veteran and a co-founder of the Houston Barbecue Festival. Michael Fulmer, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Appreciate the invite. Always a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Tejas Beer, a brand from Gulf Coast Distilling, has claimed the former Buffalo Bayou Brewing space in Sawyer Yards. Michael, as you may recall, Buffalo Bayou closed somewhat unexpectedly at the end of January, although if you listened to last week's interview with Brock Wagner from St. Arnold, you'll know that not everybody was as surprised by that as some of the rest of us. I know you're not a big beer guy, but what do you make of a well-established company like Gulf Coast Distilling claiming this big, beautiful 28,000 square foot, three-story facility for Tejas Beer, which is relatively unknown, but is about to be everywhere?
It's a big step. It's very ambitious. That's a huge space. It's a big financial commitment. This is a company that really is, you know, I guess giant Texas distillers are known for spirits, not for beer. And Tejas, is not, they're kind of a new and up and coming in terms of hitting the market. So this is a big step, but you know what, if you want to, you know, you want to conquer the market, you know, you want to integrate yourself, sometimes taking the big step is the way to go.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's hard to break in with craft beer right now, as Brock sort of discussed last week. And so if you're going to go in this direction and you have the substantial resources that Gulf Coast does, then why not make a splash? And you know, the other thing that I thought was interesting is that Brock said, you know, if we want to be in another market, then we really need a facility, because events and building that sense of community are so important to a brewery's identity. And so if you're Gulf Coast and you're trying to establish this Tejas beer brand, then it seems to me that the best way to do that is with a building that people can go to. They can try the beer. You can have a restaurant, you can have events, you can do all kinds of stuff, but you have to have the building. And so that, I think that may be a big part of their strategy.
100%. I mean, when you think back to when St. Arnold was in that you know, warehouse district off 290, and look where they are now, you know, it's amazing, and how they've become, you know, synonymous with the Houston community. And I think, you know, for Tejas to like to integrate themselves, you know, they've got to embrace that community, and of course there has to be reciprocity to that. Ultimately, of course, it has to be a good product. I think they have like 5 or 6 beers, you know, it's the, you know, porters, the IPA, you know, an Oktoberfest.
It's a little hard to tell because they acquired this brand from a brewery out in West Texas, and they've been sort of building it up. They definitely have 2 beers. There's definitely like a lager and an amber, but I'm not 100% sure how many different styles of beer they're currently brewing.
Yeah, like all the beer nerds, if you'll excuse the expression, you know, will, their natural curiosity will drive them there. But it's like, can you get the community, you know, the mainstream people there? You know, that's interesting. Like when I look back to, once again, we talk about St. Arnold's when they started doing like the one pot event, and that like sells out immediately. They actually, you know, hitched their wagon to us, to Houston Barbecue Festival, from the, you know, day one. And they've been nothing but fantastic in supporting us, and doing events with them is fantastic. So that's a big space that Tejas is going into. You know, they can definitely start off with smaller events and maybe move into something bigger. That's certainly a great location. And I think another key thing is that they're in HEB. HEB is, you know, renowned for supporting Texas brands. And when you get the casual shoppers, you know, just maybe idle curiosity will get them to drink it. You know, if you walk down the beer aisle there, it's, you know, it's really daunting. You know, there's so many choices. So I think that's a great, you know, it's a great first step for them. You know, getting into HEB, getting the space. I mean, they just have to deliver now on the product, and hopefully the people will embrace that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think building that brand awareness with, you know, a major push in HEB, that obviously is going to help them. Having a facility that people can visit, where they can hold some events and bring people in, I think that's going to be a big part of it. And then they have that restaurant, and they, you know, they haven't really said what the plans are for that. But, you know, obviously when Buffalo Bayou moved in there, they had Arash Karad as the chef, and, you know, Arash had done great work at Beavers and a bunch of other places. And now he's with Blood Brothers, but, you know, getting someone who could really drive that food program was important. So we'll see. I mean, they could, you know, if they wanted to make a splash with somebody, they certainly have the resources to do that. If they want to kind of start small and scale up with someone less well-known, that's certainly an option available to them too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big building and there's a ton of parking, and that bodes well for them.
Yeah. Right. If nothing else, it's a great location. People love to be in Sawyer Yards. It's close to downtown. It's close to the Heights. It's right off of that Washington corridor. It's got plenty of parking, and we haven't tried the beer yet, so I won't offer an opinion on the beer. But if, you know, if the beer is good and the food is good and the vibes are good, then they've got all the opportunity in the world. All right, let's move on to topic number two, Toca Madera, which I am describing as an upscale Mexican-inspired steakhouse with locations in Hollywood, Scottsdale, and Las Vegas. Is coming to Houston this June. It is opening at the Allen, which is the mixed-use development that includes the new Thompson Hotel on Allen Parkway. Toca Madera is known for a bunch of things, but among others, they use a lot of imported Wagyu beef from both Australia and Japan. And they have live entertainment such as DJs and fire performers. Michael, I say all that to say to you, you're a steakhouse guy. You've worked at steakhouses. You like eating at steakhouses. What do you think about this? Are we ready? Is Houston ready for a Hollywood, Vegas-style, upscale steakhouse?
I don't think it's a question of are we ready. It's a question of, you know, have we maxed out on steakhouses? And that's a question I think a lot of people ask in all you see in New York and L.A. And the answer never seems to be no. Like, there's room for another one. Now, what I do find, you know, compelling is that, you know, this is a Mexican themed steakhouse. And so they add that, you know, that angle to it, if you will, not to sound cynical about it, but they bring that part into it. I've only recently become aware of them. It came across my social media feed. I think it was on Instagram, where I saw this just humongous tomahawk ribeye. You see that enough places. It's, you know, it's a showstopper. But it was, you know, the presentation was so over the top, where it's hanging, it's brought tableside, you know, it's hanging from this little hook, and then underneath is salt, and they flame it again. They char it tableside. It's very dramatic. And I think the price I saw was like $400. I mean, the price was commensurate with the whole show. And do we have anything like that? No, we don't really quite have anything like that. So can they carve out their own space and identity? You know, are there people with a ton of you know, disposable income that want this kind of experience? I think so. I think so. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's no sort of more tired, you know, Facebook foodie group trope than we have too many of whatever style of restaurant you want. Too many burgers, too many tacos, too many pizzerias, too many steakhouses, right? That's not, you know, as I've been known to say on the show and in response to those comments on Facebook, that's not how capitalism works, right? That's not, there's no arbitrary limit to the number of steakhouses. Especially what happens is, you know, people keep opening them and diners keep eating at them. So, you know, until the market, until Houstonians show that they are not interested in patronizing a new steakhouse, people are going to keep opening them. And what's so crazy to me is, you know, this stretch of Allen Parkway from basically, you know, Shepherd to downtown had zero steakhouses as recently as, say, the beginning of 2022. And pretty soon we're going to have, well, I guess Perry's opened up maybe in 21 or somewhere around there. But, you know, we're absolutely swimming in them. I mean, you know, Perry's may have established the beachhead, but now there's George James and Andiron. Tocamadera is about to open. And then sometime very soon, I expect Turner's Cut, the luxurious steakhouse from Berg Hospitality, is going to open here in the coming weeks, like maybe even before Tocamadera. So we're going from 1 to 5 pretty quickly. And that's to say nothing, of course, of all the steakhouses actually in downtown, none of which have shown any signs of slowing down. So it's a competitive market, but, you know, bringing that reputation from LA and from Las Vegas, I mean, I mean, I've had several people say to me, I've been to Tocamadera and other cities. I can't wait for it to come.
Yeah, it's got a sexiness factor, no doubt about it. You know, it's not just these sort of high-end luxury ingredients. It's not just like, oh, we're getting Wagyu. You know, we're getting from several different prefectures. I think the one in Vegas actually, you know, ponied up and paid for the Kobe, you know, name for so they can serve that. Doing the big tomahawk thing, you know, and there's just going to be truffles everywhere, that kind of thing. But, you know, of course, we won't find out till they open, of course. But I'm sure the environment, you know, and how they build out is going to be, you know, par for the course for all of that. And like I said, I don't think there's no shortage of people wanting, you know, this kind of experience. I think there's three strong things working in their favor. One, it's, you know, sort of inside the loop, close enough to downtown. So you're drawing on, you know, a very well-to-do local group. You're going to have access to downtown and all the business expense people. And having this kind of experience is like, that's really great for a special occasion. I mean, when people really want to, hey, I don't go to steakhouses very often. I like to cook my own steak, but you know what? It's my birthday or it's our anniversary and I really want to have a show. And that's what they're going to give them. I think we're kind of, when we talk about like, have we maxed out on steakhouses, it's the cookie cutter steakhouse, you know, that goes back to like the 80s and 90s, you know, the red leather brass, you know, and then the straight, maybe 4 or 5 cuts, and then a Cabernet heavy wine list. You've got to bring something more to the game now. You know, Pappas Brothers, you know, conquered that early. And there's several, you know, others that have done quite well, who, you know, you've mentioned before. So this brings something new to the game. And I think it's actually kind of exciting.
No, I mean, I share that excitement. And you do make a valuable point, right? That none of these steakhouses that have opened in the last couple of years are just that traditional, you know, Peter Luger, Pappas Brothers style, dry aged beef, cheesy potatoes, oysters, martinis kind of steakhouses, right? They're all putting a twist on it. They're all kind of tweaking the format in their own ways. I mean, even, you know, we went to Prime 131 that we talked about pretty recently, and, you know, that has a whole live fire component and an interactivity because you can see them cooking from where you're sitting. So even in that sense, the presentation, the atmosphere, the experience, there's a lot of room to kind of tweak all those things. And it certainly seems like Tocamadera is going to put its spin on all of that, not just the food.
Yeah, and it's going to be a very sort of adult theme kind of place too. And when I say that, I think back to like when the Strip House opened way back in the day, and it wasn't like they weren't going for the family friendly kind of experience. Not that it was quote unquote, you know, inappropriate or lascivious, but it had that kind of erotic edge.
But there were pictures of topless ladies.
They were silhouettes, sir. Silhouettes, you know, as well, yes. You know, yes. And I think that's what they're going for. You know, I think I remember looking at their website in Vegas, like children under 16 are not welcome in the dining room after 7 o'clock and they can't go in the bar. Now, that's Vegas. That's obviously not going to fly here. And I don't think they do that at any of the other restaurants. You know, it's a Vegas thing. But, you know, that's the experience they're going for. And I think there's plenty of room for them to succeed.
Absolutely. All right. And let's do topic number three, just briefly, while we're talking about the Thompson Hotel, we should talk about its new coffee shop and cocktail bar. It is from Maven Coffee Company, which was founded by Houston Astros pitcher Lance McCullers Jr. Michael, you're a coffee guy. You like a nice cup of Joe. What does a coffee shop have to do, especially when it's located in a very expensive, very luxurious hotel, to stand out and draw locals?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what it is. Is it like a bar? I mean, they're
it's both, right? It's in the morning, it's coffee, and they have espresso beverages and cold brew and all of that. And then kind of as you get into the afternoon and the evening, it transitions into coffee cocktails and other cocktails. They've got a little bit of food. It's not anybody's idea of a restaurant, but it's got snacks.
Dad, you got to have snacks. Okay. First off, there's really nothing quite like this. There's places that are coffee, you know, they're coffee places that are centered for that. But this is a different kind of experience. I mean, they're all about their cold brew. And, you know, the espresso martini is not going away anytime soon. I mean, I've talked to several different roasters who have repositioned their product so that they can make, you know, cold brew and cold espresso to deliver to restaurants, because so many, you know, it's like for them to make it themselves is one, it's very labor intensive, and it's cost, you know, the cost differential and just being able to order the product from your, you know, your coffee purveyor, something that will hold, you know, as long as it's, you know, as long as it's refrigerated, the integrity of the product will hold, and it's great for cocktails. And they're positioning them, repositioning themselves so that they can now take care of all these restaurants that want all this product. So their timing really couldn't be better where that's concerned. I mean, do we think that's going to go away anytime soon? I don't think so.
No, it shows no signs of slowing down. And if anything, you know, the Carajillo has become so trendy that
right.
Now you have a choice, right? You can have an espresso martini or a Carajillo. So,
which is delicious.
Yeah.
And they're positioning themselves in a very, you know, sort of luxurious way. They've put themselves into like all of the high-end restaurants, having, for, you know, one of the Fertitta kids as an investor and a partner. I think that certainly helps. You know, I think I looked at their memorabilia website. You know, you can buy their t-shirts $54. Like, I don't know what makes a t-shirt $54, you know, if it's been, you know, Egyptian cotton from a different era, I have no idea. But just by putting something like that, you're saying, you know what, we are a luxury good item, and, you know, staying to that. They're not going for the college student who wants to pop open his laptop and write, you know, a 10-page paper. They're looking for something more of a adult nighttime sort of vibe experience, if you will. So
yeah, I think that's right. I think they had a big kind of friends and family opening party a couple of weeks ago, and I saw the owners of Clarkwood stop by and have nice things to say about the drinks, and that kind of makes sense, right? If you could kind of do that Allen Parkway bar crawl, where you could either start or finish. You could start at Maven and finish at Clarkwood. You could start at Clarkwood and then go to Maven. But it does seem to me like they are kind of trying to appeal to a similar group of people.
Yeah, and like I said, it's like seeing how well they've integrated into many of the high-end restaurants in this town is impressive.
Well, you know, we love the Astros, so any affiliation with an Astros player, like especially a fan favorite like Lance McCullers, that's hard to ignore.
Absolutely.
All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Michael, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about two places. Let's start with Late August. This is Chris Williams of Lucille's Hospitality Group, his new place in the Ion. We remember that originally this was supposed to be Don Burrell's restaurant. Don has moved on to other projects. So instead, Chris recruited Chef Sergio Hidalgo, who had been in the NIFA's organization. They sort of shifted their focus from Asian flavors to Mexican flavors. And they're still kind of trafficking in nostalgia, kind of blending some Mexican cuisine with some various dishes from the African diaspora, Southern influences. So there's a lot going on at Late August, but let's say we had a pretty good dinner there. What do you think?
There is a lot going on there. And you know what? The majority of what we had was really quite good. One of the things that really impressed me before we talk about the food was the service. I mean, were we a known quantity? We were. But everyone who came to the table was not just able, but like they were excited to talk about the food, and they were able to speak about its origins, what, you know, how the dish was conceived, you know, what the ingredients were. Like there was a real sort of, if you will, holistic. I mean, they really had saw the big, it's like, it seemed like the whole staff had this kind of bit. They understood the little picture and the big picture all together, and they were able to communicate it well. And that, that speaks very well for, you know, their front of the house and how their training has gone. So kudos to them on that.
I just to sort of build on that, Danny Davis is the GM and sommelier there. And he just took excellent care of us, you know, the whole time we were there, you know, recognized me from other restaurants where he's worked, where we've interacted and kind of, you know, guided our experience and suggested cocktails and just really had a full handle on our evening.
Yeah, but the other servers, the food runners, like the bartenders, I was like, it was really like they all really kind of had it together. And that's encouraging, particularly, you know, as we talk so often about like just all of these restaurants opening and like, how are they staffing them? It's not just enough to get like a warm body and say, you know, this is what it is. Now, has Late August had the longest gestation period of any restaurant I'm aware of? Yeah. But you know what? They hit the ground running. You know, the crudo that we had, which was done with a flounder, which is, you know, that's not a very traditional crudo. That's a fish that falls apart very easily. And it's hard to cut it properly with that. And so not only was the presentation on, but like the flavors and textures all came together really well. You know, the shallots, there was a little bit of chili de arbol. It was delicious. I was really impressed. And our friend Felice, I think, would be too with, you know, with the gumbo. A lot of places don't put gumbo on their menu, you know, because you're competing with mom's recipe. You're competing with the family recipe. Everyone has their idea of it. And this was just, it was delicious. Like the roux was perfect. The flavors were all there. They added cactus, you know, the nopales into it as a thickener. And it wasn't just kind of a gimmick at all. It really worked, you know, hats off to them on that. And then several other dishes we can talk about were really, I thought, pretty successful.
Yeah, no, I think we liked quite a bit of what we tried. I mean, we had the field pea hummus with the fry bread that I really enjoyed. That fry bread is basically an adapted version of the chili biscuit recipe that's a signature at Lucille's.
It's basically delicious.
Yeah, it's undeniably delicious. We had they call it citrus pork confit, but basically it's carnitas, and it's served on a kind of a masa cake, almost like a, you know, like a tostones, like in Puerto Rican food. You know, it's a very clever presentation. And of course we had the chili rub pork rib, which they gave us one each of those because we were trying a whole bunch of stuff in the house made corn tortilla. I thought all of that was really successful. I mean, the only like dish that really missed for me was their barbecue. It was supposed to be kind of barbecue shrimp with some octopus. That preparation, I love that preparation. I love the vinegar of it. I love the buttery, just richness of New Orleans style barbecue shrimp. But I just don't think it played very well with the octopus.
No, I agree. It's too much octopus, not enough shrimp, too much fry bread. You know, that's, you know, I want to have big shrimp. I want to have a lot of shrimp. and we only had a couple. And so the flavor was there. It's just the proportions for me. And I think I'm hearing that from you, were off also. And that's an easy fix if they're listening to us.
Right. I don't know that Chris Williams or Sergio Hidalgo really needs our help to run a successful restaurant.
No, I don't think they do, but that was like, I think we were in agreement on that. I think we had an oxtail soup too, that was just rich with umami and delicious. The oxtails were cooked perfectly. It was delicious.
Yeah, I know. That was one of my favorite things we ate, and kind of looking at the menu online, it looks like that oxtail has now been replaced with cabrito, which I'm actually intrigued by. I think that's I'd go back to try that for sure.
Sign me up. You get a slew of successful dishes that you can, create some seasonality and some things that are signature. I think they talked about also, catering to the office spaces in terms of like what they could do for lunch. I think that'll go a long way towards them having longevity.
Yeah. Apparently the kitchen is much larger than would otherwise be necessary to sustain the dining room, which isn't tiny, but is relatively small. And so, yeah, they have a whole plan to serve a different menu to the office workers. Obviously, they're open for lunch and dinner. I expect them to add brunch at some point. But I mean, not that I had any concerns, but just they hadn't really shared very much about what the vision for the restaurant was going to be. And so coming in, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but I really enjoyed our meal at Late August, and I look forward to going back.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a great patio, so I guess come November, I could easily have a meal outside.
You've got like 3 more weeks, I think, before it really gets too hot, to be honest.
Yeah, it's up and down. It'll be up and down on that one. I think also having Chris, his name there behind that, like if this menu had dropped and it had been like a chef from out of town or somebody we didn't know, I think it would be interesting and it would have some appeal. But like, he's got just a great rep. His cred is solid, and I hope that brings the people in, because there's some really interesting dishes here. And there's almost like an intellectual aspect to the meal, but it's not required to enjoy it. There's an interesting story behind many of the dishes and how some of these recipes come from his family or how they happen in terms of serendipity from R&D. And I love that kind of stuff. Is it necessary to enjoy? It is not. But to me, that's just, that's something extra that makes the experience even better.
Absolutely. All right. And then let's talk about our second restaurant. I want to talk to you about the Pit Room. Specifically their new location in the Memorial City area. This just opened about a week ago. It is a second location of the Montrose Barbecue restaurant that's in the mix among several high-quality Houston area barbecue joints. But they, they cook on offset smokers. They make three kinds of sausage. Their tortillas that are made with brisket fat have always been very tasty, very much a staple. So, the Pit Room is a barbecue place that does a lot of things right. Memorial, at least that kind of Memorial City area, doesn't really have much barbecue to speak of. So this seems like quite a good opportunity for the Pit Room to establish itself.
No, I agree. It's like it's a straight Texas experience. What was the barbecue hybrid place that was over in City Center that closed?
International Smoke.
Right, that EJ was at. Yeah, so like this is what that area really, I think this is perfect for that area. We're not trying to create like this kind of dining experience and integrating other, dining, styles. It's like this is, Texas Trinity. It's great brisket. It's fatty and lean briskets. It's these house-made sausages, the commitment to that. Really solid ribs, they just come, the tensile strength is just kind of perfect, doesn't fall off, and good flavors on all that. And then getting things like the chicken they're a beast, opening up early, doing the breakfast tacos and staying open late. you know, the Pit Room has always been a place that I have sent people, you know, when they say, oh, where can I get something? Where can I get some barbecue after, you know, 5 o'clock, after 6 o'clock? You know, that's not a chain place. That's not a Rudy's kind of thing. And to get a quality experience. And the Pit Room has always been, you know, my go-to place for that. And I live in the neighborhood of the original place. And it is not uncommon, you know, as I'm driving by at 7, 8 o'clock, that I see a line out the door at 8 o'clock. You know, they're up until 9. And this is a much larger operation. It's really built to handle a larger crowd. And I think that the timing and the space is right on time. It was perfect.
Right. No, I think, you know, when I talked to Michael Sandbrooks, who's the owner of the Pit Room, about this restaurant, he said, we took everything that we ever wanted for the original location and put it into this one. Because, you know, the Pit Room is really, it's the restaurant and then it's the bar next door with the patio. So they just integrated all of that into one big space. And it's enormous. It's, you know, 200 seats. And we should say, I mean, we went on a Saturday night at 7 o'clock, and that is not always a time when a barbecue restaurant is at its best in terms of the freshness of its food or whatever. But we had a good experience. I mean, I thought the quality of what we had was consistent with my visits to the Pit Room across, you know, the several years that they've been open.
Yeah, absolutely. The turkey was moist. It had a little bit of smoke to it. You know, having that condiment bar, you know, where they're clearly doing all their own pickles, making their own salsas, you know, is fantastic. Of course, serving Coke Zero, always a good call. and then a ton of parking, like most of the other operations in the lot where they're at are daytime operations or things that, you know, like at night, they're not going to impede upon the parking there. So I think back to like what a difference the Pit Room would have been if they hadn't, you know, bought the bar next door with all the additional seating, the coverage, the parking, all of that. And, you know, what a great move that was. And to hear, you know, like Michael Sandbrooks talk about it, like, well, let's just put it all together. They have a huge outdoor dining area, but it's covered. So that means you have fans. That means you have TVs. That also means if it's raining, you can still sit out there. And that's fantastic.
Right. No, I mean, I agree with all of that. You know, the only thing we didn't do was try the tacos, but I'm sure they're consistent with the Montrose location. And, you know, I sort of came from I-10, got off at the toll road, made the U, and you go past Taste of Texas and that Papa Dough and that Papacitos and everything else. There's a Pluckers over there, just everything. And all those restaurants on a Saturday night were absolutely rocking and rolling. And you just feel like that the Pit Room has just a tremendous opportunity to capture some of those diners, and especially once they roll out this dinner menu that they've got, that's going to have chicken wings and a burger and a steak and a couple other things on it, that really feels like the sky's the limit, especially in terms of the number of people that they could wind up serving in a day.
And it's not just the diners. Is the, you know, when you think about what other barbecue joints are in that area, and there's nothing really right near it, but, you know, if I talk to, you know, Russell Ragel nearby, or you know, Wayne over at the Brisket House, like the amount of to-go business they do is significant. And it's not just like on the holidays, you know, Memorial Day and you know, the 4th of July. And, you know, they're going to have a separate area set up for that to-go. Of course, they have a separate menu for it. There's going to be parking for it, although I'm not sure people respect that, but we'll, you know, that we'll see. But I think they're going to do about a monster amount of to-go business. And that's always a good line to a barbecue place being successful.
Right. I mean, you know, you talk about, you know, what's in the neighborhood or what's close by. I mean, really there's Fijis in Spring Branch, but that's a little bit to the east. You know, Ragel's is a little bit to the east. So there's nothing in that kind of immediate Memorial City area. And so again, I just think, you know, from a business perspective, it's a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah. And they bring like a solid rep to that. So, you know, I wish them all the best.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I mean, at this point, like, you know, I'm not sure I'd go back just for barbecue, but when they roll out that dinner menu, I definitely want to try all that. Cause I know Michael Sandbrooks has been hard at work with his culinary team, getting those recipes developed and ready to go.
Yeah, he's got a restaurant empire now. He can draw on all that.
Absolutely. All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurants of the week. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be Michael Posey from Wild Soul.